We are beginning Perek Levi of Brachos, which places us on page Nun Gimel and Ois Ayin Hei. The fourth Perek, Tfilos HaShachar, focuses on Shemana Esrei. The fifth Perek does also. So the first thing it's discussing is the Zmanim for davening. So that leads the Gemara into a discussion, which we have here in Ein Yaakov, Itmar. We said that there's Machlokes Amaroyim. Rav Yosi Rav Chanina Omer Tfilos Ovos Tiknum. Rav Yosi Rav Chanina says that the tefillahs were set up by the Ovos, Avraham Shachris, Yitzchak Mincha, Yaakov Meiriv, Rav Yishur ben Levi, Omer Tfilos Kineged Tzmidim Tiknum. And Rav Yishur ben Levi says that the tefillahs were set up to correspond to the Tzmidim. Now, even Rashi explains, it doesn't mean that Rashi is not printed over here, but Takosik brings it, that if not, we're not talking about the Nusach of the Tefillah. That was set up by the Anshe Knesset HaGedolah. What we're talking about is who was the first one to come up with the idea, or what was it corresponding to. So he explains that the importance of it is to tell us that even back even it was the Anshe Knesset HaGedolah at the beginning of the second Nes Mikdash. That means that in no time, and for hundreds of years after there, you still have tefillahs. You still have korbanos. Nevertheless, they understood that it's important not just to have korbanos, you have to have tefillah as well. So even though we say the idea is one of them is avodah, and we say that primarily avodah means the avodah of korbanos, and only when we don't have the avodah of korbanos, then in the shama parim sfasenu. But there is a point that you have to have the avodah of tefillah even when there were korbanos. Marsha says even the opinion that says the Gemara actually goes on to say that even Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina agrees that the tefillahs were set up to correspond to the korbanos. Otherwise, where does Musaf come from? All it is, and again, the order of the brachas and the nusach of the brachas was also made much later. What we're talking about is where does the concept of davening three times a day come from? According to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, each of the obis first came up with that. And Marsha discusses each of them, in fact, did daven all three tefillahs. We know they kept all the mitzvahs, but each one was more zoriz. Brings from Sefer Yochsin, maybe each one was more zoriz in his particular tefillah. In fact, Tosfos over here, it's not printed here in Ein Yaakov, mentions, for example, here we're saying that Yitzchak was the first one to be misakin tefillas mincha, but you have a Gemara in Yuma that calls mincha Avraham Avinu's tefillah. So what do you mean? Is it Avraham's or it's Yitzchak's? So one answer Tosfos says is that in fact Yitzchak was misakin it, but then Avraham started davening it as well, and therefore it can be called Avraham's tefillah. There are places in Maimorich Siddus where it talks about on a deeper level. I mean, after all, we know Eilav Eilav Jibra Elokim Chaim, so there has to be some deeper meaning of this point, whether we're saying it's the Ovis or the Tefillis. So there's a minor of there's something in from the Tzemach Tzedek in Ora Torah that makes the point that if we say it's connected to Tzmidim, then it means what is the Talmud? You're taking an animal and you're offering it. So that corresponds to offering your Nefesh of Bahamas to the Eivishtir. As opposed to if you say it's connected Ovis, where the Ovis serve the Eivishtir with the Nefesh Elokis and with Ava, then in that case that represents the aspect of Ava in Tefillah. Then there's a minor of the Rebbe Maharash that takes a different tack on it. He says, both of them mean that our tefillahs go up to the Merkava. But what part of the Merkava? We know on the one hand, we talk about the highest HaKodesh, or the Merkava. They're the ones who carry the chariot of Hashem. And it talks about in the Zohar, it's brought in many places in the Siddurs, that Kavyachol, they are sustained from the energy of the Korbanos, that the Pnei Shur in the Merkava is sustained by the spirit of the Shur that's offered, and so on and so forth. On the other hand, we also say ha'ovus heinein merkava. So depending what level of the merkava we're talking about, then the point is whether we say ovus or whether we say kineged tzmidim, then either way we're saying it reaches all the way up to the merkava. So the Gemara continues, Tanya kavaseid Rav Yosi Rav Chanina, v'Tanya kavaseid Rav Yishur ben Levi. In fact, we have braises like both of those opinions. These opinions are not just original to them, they go back to Tanoim before them. Tanya kavaseid Rav Yosi Rav Chanina, Avraham tikkun tefillas shachris, that this braise says Avraham set up, was the first one to daven Tefillas Shacharis, Shenema, Vayashkim Avram Baboker. The pasuk says Avram got up early in the morning, Elamokam Omer Thomas Pnei Hashem, to the place where he had stood in the presence of Hashem. This is on the day on which Sodom was destroyed. And what is this? Asher Omad Shom, Ve'in Amida Elasfila. The word Amida means to stand there to daven. As we find that it says about Pinchas, he stood up by that he davened, and the plague stopped. So we see that the word omad is associated with not just standing up, but standing to daven. Next, Yitzchak tikkun tefillas mincha. Yitzchak was the second for the first time tefillah of mincha. Shenema, we have the pasuk in this week's parasha. Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basodil fnos orev. Yitzchak went out to talk to speak in the field towards the evening, and that's when Rivka and the whole caravan came. The in sicha el tefillah. The word sicha means davening. Shenema tefillah la'onichiyate v'lishna Hashem yishpech sicha. As the pasuk says, a tefillah of the poor person when he's fainting and he pours out his speech before Hashem. So we see that the word sicha means davening. In fact, Tosfos asks over here, printed in the Gemara, that there's a different Gemara in Avodah Zarah that says from the very words Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh itself, we learn that means that he was davening. Why does the Gemara have to bring a different pasuk over here in Tillim to substantiate that point? So Tosfos says, okay, different sugyas do different things. Marsha points out that when it says Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basada, now it doesn't say who he was talking with. So you could understand, okay, he happened to be talking, he's standing over, he's walking along there and talking with somebody. And I didn't mention him because he wasn't important. But so therefore we need a different pasuk to show Hashem Yishpech Sicha, to show that it's a lashon of tefillah. On the other hand, then you have the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, so that would be maybe a one-time thing. One time it happened that he was davening over there. How do we know that he did it as tefillah? That's why we have Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach implying that he was doing it on an ongoing basis. See, in fact, you need both Gemaras and both psukim. Vachana, the pasuk is Vachana him in the beres aliba. We're going to have that in the next parak, actually. We're going to have a whole long discussion of Chana's tefillah and all the dinim of davening that we learned from it. So that's Yitzchak. Yaakov tikkun tefillas arvis. Yaakov was mesachin to the tefillah of Ma'ariv. Shenema vayifka b'mokem vayolon shom tivoh Hashemesh. He encountered the place of the Beis Mikdash, and he lay down there because the sun had gone down. And again, the word vayifka, the shodesh poga, means to daven. Shenema, as you find, Hashem says to the Novi Yiriyah, the Jewish people are doing averus. Don't you daven on behalf of this people. Don't lift up a cry or tefillah on their behalf, but I'll tifka be, and don't tifka in me, because Hashem is saying, unless they do tshuva, that's what's needed, not your tefillahs. So we see that the word tifka means to daven. So vayifka v'mokim means the same thing. So there we have a braisa that says that each of the others was misak in one of the tefillahs. There is a vort that they say on this, and I don't remember what the mocker of it is, that these also reflect the three stages that of the lives of each of the others. Avraham was like a bright morning. Everybody recognized, everybody honors him. See how they came out of the Sechenu. Even Pare and Abimelech are forced to honor him and everything. Yitzchak is already, the sun is starting to go down. You already have the Leif Meimanu, they tell him, and then they're fighting with him over the wells and so forth. And Yaakov is already in the night. His whole life was one chain of tzaras after another. So therefore, each one of them taught us, no matter what your circumstances are in life, whether things are going really good, whether things are not so great, or whether they're really horrible, either way, you got to dive into it. Then Tanya Kavaseder Rabbi Shurban Levi. Then you have a Braisa like Rabbi Shurban Levi that says that the Tfilas are connected to Midim. The Braisa says, "Mipnei Ma Omer Tfilas Hashachar Ad Chatzoris." Why does it say in the Mishnah that Shachar you can daven until Chatzoris? Shari Tomer Chol Shachar Korav Baholach Ad Chatzoris, because you could bring the Tomer Chol Shachar any time until Chatzoris. Really, they would usually bring it much earlier. They would usually bring it. They would usually shecht it even before Netzachama, around sometime after Alois HaShachar. But for Diabet, they can bring it as late as Chatzos, and therefore you can daven until Chatzos. But Rabbi Yehuda Amad Dalad Shois Fula, and then in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda says only until 4 hours in the day, because that's the latest, according to him, that they ever brought the Korban Tumid. And it goes through, and you see over there the times, that the timetable for the Korbanos is the timetables for the Tefillos. The Rif over here makes a point that a nachtamina between these two explanations could be, we're going to talk about soon, about the question of tefillas arvis rishus. Is tefillas arvis the same level of chiyuv as the other tefillas? And we're going to see that there's an opinion that says that not. And in fact, la halacha, that is how it is. So now, if we say that they were set up by the others, then on the face of it, there's no reason that Maariv should be any more Rishus than any other tefillah. Yaakov is no less one of our others than Avraham and Yitzchak. Mashenkin, if we say the Kneged Tzmidim, the Braisa, the rest of it, that's not quoted over here in Ein Yaakov, goes on to point out that says what is Maariv corresponds to burning the Evorim Updorim, the leftover limbs and fats of the Karbonis, which they could do all night, but you wouldn't always have those. Sometimes they would manage to burn them all during the day, so because of that, tefillah Adis can be Rishus. And then Iyun Yaakov says that not necessarily. You could even say, even if we say it is Kenegan Obis, you still have a reason why to say that the one corresponding to Yaakov would be Rishus. And in fact, there's a Sicha that ever brings that a Zohar that says as much that the Tefillah of Yaakov is a Tefillah of Rishus, and that ever develops the idea. And then the Sicha over there that we know that you have things that are, in general, you have things that are mitzvah and things that are Rishus. So therefore, in a way, Rishus is higher because it shows that you're doing your own Yisrusa Delosata and you're putting in your own effort to come close to the Eidishti. You're not just doing whatever it says by the book. So in that sense, then, Yaakov's Tefillah of Maariv is higher and greater than the other ones. Okay. The Gemara goes on to discuss to discuss certain dinim involving davening Shemana Esrei and the times of things, whether you're allowed to daven Friday night davening early before Shabbos has begun, and so on and so forth. In the course of that, the Gemara mentions that Rabbi Yumiya Bar Abba one time davened Shemana Esrei standing behind Rav. And Rav was his Rebbe, so that leads the Gemara to ask, how could he do that? You're not allowed to stand behind your Rebbe when you're davening. Tanya, we learn in Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Hamispalo Achoyre Rabbi, when a person davens standing behind his Rebbe, which Rashi says then, it looks like Yuhara. So there's three reasons that Rishonim give what's the problem with davening behind his Rebbe. Rashi says it looks like Yuhara. It looks like he's priding himself, like, look how important I am that I can stand right behind my Rebbe. Tosfos gives a reason, because then when he's bowing in Shemana Esrei, it's going to look like he's bowing to his Rebbe. And Rabbeinu Yonah gives a reason, because what's going to happen when the Rebbe, if his Rebbe finishes davening Shemana Esrei before he does, and he wants to step out from Shemana Esrei, he can't, because you're not supposed to walk in front of somebody who's davening Shemana Esrei. In fact, in connection with that third one, the Yerushalmi tells a story. The Yerushalmi tells a story that one time Rav Chiya Bar Abba was davening Shemana Esrei, then Rav Kahana, who was a Talmud of his, came in and stood behind him and started davening Shemana Esrei, and Rav Kahana was taking very long over his Shemana Esrei. So Rav Chiya Bar Abba wanted to step back, and he couldn't. So finally, when Rav Kahana is finished, he says, come on, is that a way to act to your Rebbe? And Rav Kahana says, the reason why I daven long is because I descend from Beis Eli. And we know the Gemara tells us in various places that Beis Eli, the men from Beis Eli are destined to die young because of what Chofni and Pinchas had done over there. So therefore, I have to daven extra long in order to beg the Eivishter that I should live longer. So Rav Chiya Bar Abba gave him a bracha, Yerushalmi finishes off, and Taka Rav Kahana lived to a nice ripe old age and was healthy for his whole life. So those are the various reasons why a person is not supposed to daven behind his Rebbe. By the way, it does say in Shulchan Aruch that Yesh Oimrim, that doesn't so much apply when you're in shul, when people have Mekomis Kivoyim. We're talking about more like when you're davening at home or something. So that's the first one. V'hanoisin shalom l'rabbe. The second one is when a person gives shalom to his Rebbe. Rashi explains like he would to any other person. He just says shalom aleichem rather than something respectful like shalom alecha Rebbe. Marshad discusses it further and says that actually there can also be a difference maybe between between noisin shalom and she'ilas shalom, he says. Noisin shalom is just to say shalom aleichem. She'ilas shalom would be to ask, how is he doing? That is appropriate. The second one, she'ilas shalom, is appropriate for a Talmud to a Rebbe. In fact, Marshad brings from a Gemara elsewhere, where in Shabbos, in the whole sugya of Matan Torah, when Moshe comes up as Olam Amorim to receive the Torah, and he sees Hashem sitting over there and writing the Torah, and then Moshe doesn't say anything, and Hashem says, "What? Where you come from? You don't give shalom. You don't give shalom to your superiors." And Hoyel Achola Azreini, you should have helped me out by telling me Yashikoyach. And then Moshe answers by saying, "Vata Yigdam Akoyach Hashem." So we see, in other words, Marashal says that there is an inyan to be just she'ilas shalom, to ask how your Rebbe is doing, but not necessarily to initiate the greeting and say shalom alecha, or at least to say shalom alecha Rebbe. Anyway, so that's our nosin shalom l'rabbi, v'amachzer shalom l'rabbi, or if he replies with shalom to his Rebbe, same idea, in other words, instead of saying shalom alecha Rebbe or Mori, he just says shalom aleichem, like he would to anybody else. Or if he disputes the yeshiva of his Rebbe, which the major meaning of that, the Rambam explains, is you have a Talmud who sets up his own Beis Medrash and starts teaching and passing and halacha for people without his Rebbe permission, without his Rebbe's permission, when his Rebbe is still alive. So that's hacholik al yeshivas of Rabbi. Well, oimer gava shalayshamim pi Rabbi. Or if he says something that he didn't hear from his Rebbe, which there's a few different explanations what that means exactly. Marashah points out, yeah, many times when the Chachamim say things from Svara, they're not just always parroting back what they heard from their Rebbe. So he says that, and we find, in fact, Rebbe Eliezer had a particular hanhaga of that, but it says specifically about Rebbe Eliezer that he would never say something shalayshamim pi Rabbi, implying that everybody else was not noyig in that. So Marashah says what it means is something that's that something of Svara, sure, Rabbi Eliezer would say on his own, and other Chachamim would also. Things that are not from Svara, he wouldn't say in the name of his Rebbe if he didn't actually hear those actual words from him. And there's a few different explanations also. One explanation is almost the other way around, that a person, that when you have a person who we know he has a Rabbi Mumma, he has one particular Rebbe who we learn most everything from. Whenever he's quoting something, he ought to say whether this is from his Rebbe or not. Otherwise, when he says something strange, people are apt to think that this is from his Rebbe, and they're going to start questioning whether the Rebbe knows what he's talking about. So there's a couple of different explanations. Anyway, all of those things, Gurdim the Shechina, Shishalach Mi'Yisrael, all those things caused the Shechina to leave the Jewish people. So the Gemara asks, how is Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Abba, Talmud of Rav, standing behind Rav to daven Shmoneh Esrei? And the Gemara answers that Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Abba was not actually a Talmud of Rav. He was actually a Talmud Chaver, meaning that he's almost of the same caliber as Rav. The Gemara goes on to say that he talks to Rav familiarly, like one Chaver would to another, rather than like a Talmud would talk to his Rebbe. He was a Talmud of his in the sense there were certain things in Torah that Rav knew that Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Abba did, that he needed from him. But other than that, he's not considered so much a Talmud that he shouldn't be allowed to stand behind. The Gemara says, Tananabam. Now, talking about this matter, the Gemara starts gets into this discussion of Tfilas Arvis Rishus. So when the Mishnah gives the timetable for Tfilas, it says Tfilas Ashachar Ad Chatzos, Rabbi Yehuda Amad Abba Shois, and so forth, Tfilas HaMincha, and then it mentions Meiriv, that the Tfilah of Meiriv, Ein La Keva. There's no fixed time for it. So the Gemara points out before it gets to the part over here in Ein Yaakov, that seems to imply that it's not considered choyva, that's reshus. Otherwise, the Mishnah should have said, you have to daven until such and such a time. Which, by the way, even according to the opinion, and this is in fact the halacha, that tefillas avis reshus, Tosfos points out, and this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, doesn't mean that you can just stam say, I don't feel like davening Meir tonight, I'm not going to daven. It means if you have a mitzvah that needs to be done, and then you're able to say, I'm going to do that mitzvah, and instead that's going to override davening Meir, because you can't do that with Shachos and Mincha. The fact, by the way, that Tfilas Avis Rishus is why, in particular, why we don't have Chazor HaShachos on Meir. The whole idea behind Chazor HaShachos is to be motzi anybody who doesn't know how to daven. Since Tfilas Avis Lahalocha is Rishus, then therefore there's nobody technically who's chayev in it to the extent that you should say that you have a Hoichah Shemoneh Esrei to be motzi there. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Maisa B'Talmud Echad Shebal Lifnei Rav Yeshua. It happened once that a certain Talmud came in front of Rav Yeshua. Later on, at the end of the whole story, the Gemara identifies he was Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Keep in mind, by the way, think of the order of the generations over here. Rav Yeshua was one of the Rabbeim of Rav Akiva. We're going to have both Rav Yeshua and Rav Akiva are going to feature in the story over here. Among Rav Akiva's Talmidim is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. So at this point, Rabbi Shimon Yochai must have been fairly young. He must have been maybe just a bar mitzvah bach, or maybe a little older there or something, but certainly not that he's going to be one of the regular Talmidim in the Beis Medrash. Anyway, Amalei Rebbe, Tfilas Arvis Rishus Oichoyva. So he asks it, Rebbe, what is Tfilas Arvis? Is it Rishus? Is it optional? Meaning, like Tosfos says, if you need to, if you have an overriding reason, then you can skip it. Oichoyva, or is it a requirement? So he tells him it's a Rishus. Balifnei Rabban Gamliel. Now Rav Shimon went to ask Rabban Gamliel the same question. Amalei Tulas Abes Rishus Eichayva. Amalei Chayva. And Rabban Gamliel tells him it's required. Amalei. So Rav Shimon says, Baloi Rav Yeshua Amalei Rishus. Rav Yeshua told me that it's Rishus. So what's going on over here? What is the halacha? Amalei. So Rabban Gamliel tells him, Hamtin actually konsu bali trace in the Beis HaMedrash. Wait until the masters of the shields come into the Beis HaMedrash. The bali trace and the masters of the shield, Rashi says, means the chachamim who fight against each other in halacha, and each of them trying to win the war of halacha. So metaphorically, they're like soldiers who are carrying shields to defend themselves against each other, against attacks. There's a few other reasons why they're called Bali Tresin. One of them is because they protect, their chus protects the whole generation like a shield. Anyway, so Rabban Gamliel tells him, wait until all the Chachamim assemble in the Beis Medrash, and then we'll get to the bottom of this once and for all. So, Omer Ashoel, so, Kivin Shenichnus Bali Tresin in the Beis Medrash, when the Chachamim came in, Omer Ashoel Vashoel, then the Aster, which Reb Shimon, got up and asked, Tfilas Abbas Yeshua Sarichoyba. Amalei Rabban Gamliel Chayva, and Rabban Gamliel tells him, like he had told him privately, it's Chayva. Amalehen Rabban Gamliel Chachamim. Now, having said that, Rabban Gamliel says to the Chachamim, Klum Yesh Adam Shacholak Olai B'Davar Zeh. Is there anybody who disagrees with me about that, or should we establish right now that that's the halacha and that's that? Amalei Rabbi Yeshua Lam. So Rabbi Yeshua tells him, no, nobody disagrees. Rabbi Yeshua, by the way, was, now you had the, Rabban Gamliel was the Nasi, Rabbi Yeshua was the Av Beis Din. All the other Chachamim were, I'm not going to say of lesser caliber, but they didn't have those official positions in the yeshiva over there. Incidentally, by the way, you don't have, throughout this whole story, Rabbi Eliezer doesn't feature, and Rabbi Eliezer is one of the great Chachamim of that time also. There's a sefer on Jew, a multi-volume series on Jewish history called Doros HaRishonim. He goes through, and it's basically, he means to explain history. He ends up a lot of times going and explaining at some length what various secular historians say and why they don't know what they're talking about. You have to reread the sources carefully. So it's more like a sefer pulpulim on history. But anyway, he explains a lot of historical facts over there. What he says is all is vital, controversial. Not everything he says is the last word on the subject. But anyway, he explains that the Seder Advarim was, we know the famous story of Tanur Shalach Noi, where Rabbi Eliezer disagreed with the other Chachamim and they ended up throwing them out of the Beis Medrash because he was sticking to his opinion. So now, Doros HaRishonim says, all of this happened after that, which is why Rabbi Eliezer does not feature in the story. And the point is, he says, up until that point, because Rabbi Eliezer, first of all, was a chaver of Yeshua from many years already. They both, in a certain sense, outranked Rabbi Gamliel in terms of Chochma and Torah. Had Rabbi Eliezer been there, then there wouldn't have been this friction in the first place, because you would have Rabbi Gamliel says one thing, Rabbi Yeshua says another, and Rabbi Eliezer would have been the machriya. He would have mediated between them. Now that he's out of the picture, then they have this clash. So Rabbi Yeshua says, no, nobody disagrees. Eitz Yosef points out, now it doesn't mean that Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind. In fact, in the event, we were saying the halacha is like him. He brings from the tzlach, because of the covered of Rabbi Gamliel, he didn't want to dispute him openly. Also, the Ramaphoshim will point out, there's another point as well. Like this, we said, what does Tfilas Abbas Rishus mean? It doesn't mean that it's completely optional, as I don't feel like davening Maariv tonight and I'm not going to bother. It means, like Tosfos says, that if you have an overarching mitzvah, then you can use it to override that. So now, when they're talking privately, when the Chachamim are talking privately among themselves, they can say Tfilas, when Rav Shimon is asking privately, they can tell him Tfilas Abbas Rishus, and there's not going to be any misunderstanding. But you're talking about here in a Beis Medrash. You had not just the Chachamim there, you had lots of spectators there who are there to see how the Chachamim learn Torah, and then listen to the discussions. If you tell them their presence, Tfilas Abbas Rishus, they're apt to misunderstand and say, hey, we don't have to daven Maariv at all. And that would be another reason why Rav Yeshua didn't want to say that. To Amalei, but Rabban Gamliel wasn't satisfied with that. He says, "V'alei mishimcha amru rishus." I was told in your name that you said rishus. Now we have to realize the time when this was taking place. Whether we follow Doros HaRishonim's timeline of whether it happened, of when these things happened, whether we follow other historians, whatever the case, this was after the Churban. This is the Chachamim were in Yavne at the time. In particular, the Jewish people are getting scattered all over the world. There's no Bis Mikdash anymore. There's no central thing. So Rav Gamliel figured that he needed to put his foot down and make it very clear to everybody that the Nasi has the highest power over the Jewish people, because otherwise everybody's going to splinter into different groups. Everybody's going to have their own understanding of halacha, and who knows where that's going to lead. So therefore, Rav Gamliel now took a very hard stance on it. He says, "Omar Yeshua, Amoida Ravlecha v'Yedubach, stand up on your feet, and you'll testify against you that you said differently, and now you're claiming that, and now you're claiming that not." In fact, Maharsha brings from Tosfos that actually you don't even need to say the Amoida Ravlecha v'Yedubach. It's not like anybody needs to testify against him. Rav Gamliel is not saying that Rav Yeshua is lying. Chas v'Shalom. He's saying, stand up on your feet. Because you don't have the right, I'm not giving you permission to sit down right now. So Amar Rav Yeshua Raglav, Rav Yeshua stood up for Amar, and he says, if I were alive and whoever was arguing with me had already passed away, then the living would be able to contradict the dead. We could say, for example, Pliny, the Chacham who already passed away, said one thing. Isaac says that I said one thing. I claim that I said something else. Okay, there'd be nobody to contradict me. But now I'm alive, and the person who's saying, who told you in my name that I said that I said something different, we're both alive. So the living can't contradict the living. In other words, yes, I admit that I did in fact say privately to Rav Shimon that Tfilas Avos is Rishus. The story continues. Rav Gamliel Yoshev V'Dorish. Rav Gamliel now was sitting over there and doushing to the tzibur. Rabbi Yeshua remained standing on his feet because Rabbi Gamliel had not given him permission to sit down. You can't sit down in the presence of the Nasi unless he gives you permission. So like this, Rabbi Gamliel told him to stand up. He didn't afterwards tell him to sit down. So again, we have to put ourselves kind of in Rabbi Gamliel's shoes. He needs to show everybody that they shouldn't think that the Nasi and the Av Beis Din are equal. And if you want to follow the Nasi in Halacha, go ahead. And if you want to follow the Av Beis Din, go ahead. Because then you're going to have the whole Jewish people are going to splinter apart. So he figured he needs to show who's boss over here. But Ad Shirinu Kala Am, eventually all the people started making noise. But Amru L'chutz B'samet Turgaman Amoid. They told Chutz B'samet Turgaman, his job was, like any Turgaman in Shas, that the Rosh Yeshiva would say whatever it is he's going to say in his shir quietly and briefly. And the Turgaman's job was to explain it out loud, was to say it out loud and explain it more clearly that everybody should understand. So now everybody yelled at Chutz B'samet Turgaman, Amoid, stop. Stop translating and explaining what Rav Gamliel was saying. But Ahmad, so he stopped. So in other words, now they're pretty upset at Rav Gamliel. In fact, Yodos HaRishonim thinks that it maybe wasn't even the Chachamim in the Beis Medrash who were protesting. They could understand what Rav Gamliel was after over here. They understand Rav Gamliel was not just doing it because of his own personal cupboard, but rather in order to keep the Jewish people united. But the regular people over there, they figured they didn't have that understanding of it, and they thought he's going too far and being too overbearing against Rav Yeshua. The Yerushalmi, by the way, when it tells the story, says they said an even sharper thing. Not just they told Chutz B'Sam Turgaman to stop. The Yerushalmi says, first of all, they told the Chazan to start the next tefillah. That's it. They're going on strike. The Shiur is over. And the Yerushalmi also says they quoted a pasuk from the end of Nochum, one of Terei Aser, that says the original context of the pasuk is about Asher and Nineveh and how wicked they were. The pasuk says, Almilei Ovra Ra'os Chatamid, whom has your evil not passed over constantly, and they actually have the chutzpah to yell that at Rav Gamliel. So again, this bears out what Yodos HaRishonim says. We're not talking about the Chachamim would never do such a thing to Rav Gamliel. We're talking about the Hamoy Nam over there. They didn't hold themselves back. Anyway, Omru, and now they were saying, Ad Kamen Etzare V'lezel. How long are we going to let this go on that Rav Gamliel is going to be harassing Rabbi Yeshua, and it's going to keep on going on? First, last year, Rosh Hashanah, he was mitzayed him. You have the story in Mishnayis Rosh Hashanah, where one time there was an argument, there was a case where Edom came and said they'd seen the new moon. Rav Gamliel said that Rav Gamliel accepted that they're telling the truth, and they had in fact seen it. Rabbi Yeshua said on the basis of something else that happened over there, the moon wasn't visible the next night, Rabbi Yeshua said there ate a sheker, so it comes out that Rabbi Yeshua would say that Elul that year was 30 days, and Rabbi Gamliel would say it was only 29, and Rabbi Gamliel tells Rabbi Yeshua, on the day that you claim to be Yom Kippur, I want you to appear in front of me with your walking stick and your bag of money to demonstrate publicly that you agree that this is not Yom Kippur. And the Mishnah goes on to say, Rabbi Yeshua was very troubled about it, and first Rabbi Akiva explains to him, Atma for the Shogeg game, etc., that even if Beis Din decides Rosh Chodesh on the wrong day because they were mistaken, so even, in other words, let's say your calculations are right and Rabbi Gamliel's are wrong, nevertheless, since the Beis Din has decided, then you have to follow them. And he goes to Rabbi Dosa ben Horkinas, and Rabbi Dosa also explains to him that you should know that the Chachamim of every generation are equivalent to the ones of Moshe in his times, Yiftach Bedoda, Kishul Bedoda, and all that. So Rabbi Yeshua went and did it. But nevertheless, it was a big humiliation for him. So that was the first one. Then they continued, also B'chorus B'maisin Rav Tzadik Tzare. Then there was the story in B'chorus involving the story involving Rav Tzadik. So now look at this. Rav Tzadik was a Kohen. Now we know, a B'chor B'hema Tahora, when the Beis Mikdash is standing, then you bring it as a Kohen. But B'chor B'maisin Rav Pesach, as we say in morning davening. But after the Beis Mikdash is destroyed, no Korbanus, so you have to wait until the animal develops a mum, and then you can shecht it and eat it. Now, the problem is that the Gemara establishes in Bechoris, a Kohen is suspect of causing a mum in the animal. Because he's likely to think to himself, why should I, I'm going to keep this animal indefinitely. It could live to be 20 years old, and I'm never going to have a chance to do anything with it, and I'm just going to have to feed it and lose money on it. Let me make a mum in it, and then be done with it. So therefore, Kohen are choshed on such things. So now, the Gemara tells a story over there where Rav Tzadik one time had a Bechor. He gave it food, and he gave it food in a type of basket that had sharp edges, and it ended up splitting his lip. Now, if a regular person does that, the halacha is we say we suspect the kohen did that deliberately to cause a mum, and therefore we can't use that mum as a basis for shechting the animal. The question became: do we say the same thing about Rav Tzadik, he being a Talmid Chacham? Do we say we don't suspect him that he would be over on the Easter of Matul Mum B'Kodeshim? It's alive after all, so we wouldn't suspect him. So therefore, it must have been an accident. Or do we say that we're not that we don't make a difference? Loy plug when the Chachamim make a rule, then it applies across the board. So that was another argument between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel. And you have the same kind of thing as we're describing over here in the Gemara, where Rabbi Yeshua said one thing to Rabbi Tzadik, and then Rabbi Gamliel meanwhile said something different. And then in the Beis Medrash, when Rabbi Gamliel called out Rabbi Yeshua on it, you have the same thing like it says over here, that he told him stand up, and didn't give him permission to sit down. So that's already the second time that Rabbi Yeshua did this to that Rabbi Gamliel was overbearing against Rabbi Yeshua. And now, Hochinami Tomatsaro there, and now is the third time. Enough already. So again, if we follow Joris Rishonim, this is maybe all the Hamoin Am, the common people are saying this, they don't understand what Rav Gamliel is after. It could even be, maybe it is the Chachamim, maybe even the Chachamim are starting to think that maybe Rav Gamliel is going a little too far with this. Anyway, Kula Haiv, Litsari Valezil, so is he going to keep on being Litsari him indefinitely like this? So they said, Tov and Avrei. So come, let's fire Rav Gamliel as Nasi, and we'll appoint a different Nasi instead. Well, the question becomes, Man Noikimai, who are we going to appoint as the new Nasi? Noikimai Rabbi Yeshua, should we appoint Rabbi Yeshua? He's after all the Abbasin, he's the natural thing. But the problem is, Havalei Baal Dover, he is the one involved in the story, or Baal Maisa, who is different Gersa, he is the one involved in the story. It would be a tremendous insult to Rav Gamliel that we're not only taking Rabbi Yeshua's side and deposing Rav Gamliel, but on top of that, we're going to take Rabbi Yeshua and put him in Rav Gamliel's place. It would be a tremendous blow to Rav Gamliel. They didn't want to do that. Marsha points out another point as well. You don't want people to think that maybe Rabbi Yeshua instigated the whole argument in order to get Rav Gamliel's job. So that won't work. We can imagine that Rabbi Yeshua himself was probably the first one who mentioned that point. When they start talking about Rabbi Yeshua, he may well have been the first one to mention that point. You know what? It would be a tremendous bizoyan to do that to Rav Gamliel's face. I'm not going to accept the job. So the next thing is, Noikmei Rav Akiva, should we appoint Rav Akiva as the new Nasi? Can't. Duma Onishle, Rav Gamliel might punish him. He might call down anger from Hashem on Rabbi Akiva, Jalesley's Chus Avis for Anishlei, and Rabbi Akiva does not have Chus Avis. The Rambam says that actually what it was is Rabbi Akiva's father, Yosef, was a ger. The Gemara elsewhere says, and Rabbi Nissim Goin brings it in his Kiddush on the Gemara over here, that In particular, Rabbi Akiva was a descendant of Sisera. So Sisera had lived well over 1,000 years earlier, but one of his descendants eventually was this Yosef, who the Rambam says became a ger, and Rabbi Akiva was his son. So therefore, he doesn't have schus avos like Rabbi Gamliel does. Rabbi Gamliel, after all, is from Malchus based David, so he has yichus and schus avos going back 1,000 years. Sisera was a general, right? Sisera was a Knani general who fought against the Jewish people, and then he was killed by Yoel. There's even actually, there's Gordon, Sfarim, I think it's Gordon, Asarim Amoris. The Gemara mentions in a couple of places that in Nozu and in Horius, that actually, that Yoel actually seduced Sisera to have relations with her in order that this way she'd wear him out, and then he'd be tired and she'd fall asleep, and then she'd be able to kill him with a tent peg. There's actually Sfarim that say that she did end up becoming pregnant from that, and that child is the ancestor of Rabbi Akiva that we're talking about over here. Anyway, whatever the case, the point is, so he doesn't have schus avos, so therefore, if Rabbi Gamliel calls down anger, calls down punishment from him in Shemayim, then he's not going to have schus of his ancestors to protect him. So that won't. Rather, they decided, let's appoint Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as the new Nasi. He has a lot of advantages. He's wise in Torah, so he'll be able to hold his own as the Nasi, teaching the entire Jewish people Torah. Vehu Oshir, he's rich, but who has Siri La Ezra, and he's the 10th generation descendant of Ezra, Ezra HaSofer. Who Chacham, the advantage of him being a Chacham is the Makshalem of Firefly. Anything they ask him, he'll be able to answer. After all, if the Nasi is sitting over there and giving a shir, and somebody asks on him and he can't answer, then it's a tremendous bizoyim. So like this, he'll be able to answer anything that they pose to him. Who Osher, what's the advantage of him being rich? The im maslach of their kesar, because if it's necessary for the nasi to go and bring tribute or bribes or whatever to the emperor, kunami motzi maslach kabasei, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah will be able to do it the same as Rabbi Gamliel did. Every so often, you'd have to have the nasiim would have to send bribes and tributes and whatever and taxes and whatever to Rome and visit there in person and spend lots of money and whatever. So like this, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah will be able to do that. The Gemara in other places mentions that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was extremely rich, and in one place, for example, in Shabbos, it says that just the newborn calves of his every year, he would give 12,000 of them as miser, meaning that every year he had 120,000 newborn calves in his herds. Imagine what else he had. So no matter how much the Romans are gonna demand from him in bribes or whatever, he'll be able to manage. And who has Siri Ezra, he's the 10th generation of Ezra, the advantage is the Isla is Chos Avos. So this way he has tremendous Chos from his ancestors, Vlaimotzi, Onishlei. So if Rabbi Gamliel is mad at him and calls down a curse from him in Hashemayim, then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the Chos of his ancestors going back to Ezra, will be able to save him from that. So he's our candidate. But a very interesting thing, by the way, before the continuation of the story, is that the Chidah mentions a very interesting thing in this connection. Now, we know, you have Ezra, and you have, in his times, there was his contemporary Nehemiah. Ezra was a Kohen, and Nehemiah was from Malchus Beis David. Ezra was the teacher of Torah to the whole Jewish people. He was the head of Anshei Knesset HaGdola, and Nehemiah was the governor. He was the political head of the Jewish people at that time. Now, we have a sefer in Tanakh called Sefer Ezra. About less than half of it was written by Ezra. More than half of it was written by Nehemiah. So by rights, the sefer ought to be called Nehemiah. But the Gemara tells us or at least it should be two separate svarim. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that no, the whole sefer is called Ezra because the Gemara mentions a couple of reasons why. One is because Nehemiah spoke, one is because Nehemiah asked for credit for what he did from Hashem. There's a few times in his part of the sefer where he says, Zochar li alakayav atorva, Hashem, remember for me for good the things that I accomplished. And like he's taking too much credit for his mitzvahs. Another point the Gemara says over there is he spoke badly about the previous governors before him, how they were overbearing on the Jewish people, and one of those governors is Daniel, who is greater than Nehemiah, because Daniel is a Navi, and therefore he shouldn't have done it. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara says, therefore, so you have a sefer called just Ezra, even though more than half of it was written by Nehemiah. Now, the Chidah says, eventually the Goyim split up Tanakh, they split up some Sfarim into two, they split Shmuel and Malachim into two, they split Divrei Hayamim into two, they put the divisions of the chapters that we have, they also, what? Except for the chapter divisions in Tilim and in Eicha, all the other chapter divisions, yeah, were made by the Goyim. Yeah. Elmaisa, they got accepted among Jews for practical reasons, but yeah. Anyway, so one of the things was they split Ezra and Nehemiah apart. They made them two separate books. Well, what happened? In printed Tanakh that we use, we have to have a Sefer Ezra and a Sefer Nehemiah. So what happened? What happened to what the Gemara is saying? That's all one big Sefer. So he says, Min HaShemayim, it was like this. In this story over here, he says, Rav Gamliel was a Gilgul of Nehemiah. Rav Elazar ben Azariah was not only a descendant of Ezra, but also a Gilgul of his. So now what happened was, in this story, Rav Gamliel was undergoing tremendous humiliation through Rav Elazar ben Azariah being appointed Nasi instead of him. Therefore, that helped to be mechaper on the things that Nehemiah had done wrong, that the Gemara says about the Sanhedrin. Therefore, the Chidah says eventually, Min HaShemayim, it was brought about that Nehemiah should be able to have his name attached to his Sefer after all, which is how we have it in our printed Tanakhs nowadays. Okay, so we'll continue the story with Rav Gamliel and Rav Elazar ben Azariah tomorrow, Best Hashem.
What did Nehemiah
do? There are two things. Number one is he had asked for credit for himself from Hashem for the good things that he did. Zochor li alekai l'tova. Hashem, remember for me for the good, the things that I did. On his level, it's not, on his level, it's not appropriate.
Okay.
And then the other explanation, the other point the Gemara says is that there were governors of Eretz Yisrael before him, and he criticizes them and says they were too harsh on the people. They demanded from them high taxes to fund their life, to fund their lifestyle and so forth. And I didn't do that. And one of those governors was Daniel. Daniel is on a higher level than Nehemiah, so Nehemiah should have been careful not to speak like that. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugolo, Chafal of Cheshvan. We have the mission at the end of Sota that talks about the things that are going to happen. The Ikvos Mashiach, and the time before Mashiach comes, chutzpah will increase, prices will go up, the young will humiliate the faces of the elders, and the elders will have to stand up because in the presence of the youngsters, because they'll have to give them covered. Sons will be denigrating their fathers. Daughters will be standing up to fight against their mothers. Daughters-in-law against their mothers-in-law, and a person's own members of his household will be his enemies. So now the Rebbe talks about in the letter one angle on that in Avodas Hashem, this means that no matter without starting to make calculations of where you actually stand, and even when it comes to things machshava dibra maisa, a person has the breakpoint to have chutzpah in a positive sense, to become a mashpia and to be ma'oder and teach other people around him. And not only that, you have even the Skenim, even the Zesha Konar Chachma, but they've learned the Chachma of Torah. They haven't yet been Zoicha to the light of Torah, which is Torah Sachsidus. And you yourself, only now, the Na'orim Pnei Skenim Yalbinu, in the positive sense that you'll go and teach them and expose them to that Moshe Torah, which otherwise they might not have had. So in that sense, with this Chutzpah Yaske and the Na'orim Pnei Skenim Yalbinu, there's a positive angle. And we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, talking about more positive things that we see is going on over there. Okay, halacha real quick. We were talking about dinim of mezonos. So if you have a dough that was made even with just water, and then you cook it, you say mezonos and alamichna on it, even if you have shir svi on it. Although the Alter Rebbe says that a Yorish Shemayim should only eat it for Seicha Suda, then the Siddur, he just says like what the kids of Shulchan Aruch are saying over here, that you just say mezonos and mein sholosh on it, because it was cooked rather than baked. So for example, noodles would be an example. There's no question that you make mezonos and alamichna on noodles. Okay, to be continued tomorrow, Best Hashem. I'm not a man of Kashmir, 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 I'm not a man of Kashmir